welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It is the drawing board of free speech, because you have to go back to the drawing board, and we're going back to the drawing board because there's no free speech anywhere else. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, and send badly needed fundage. All right, today's our Tuesday show. As always, we have Mark Collett on the show. Mark, welcome.
Hello, Patrick. As ever, it is good to be here. It's good to be discussing, well, it will be good to be discussing the many issues we're going to discuss today. And obviously, here in the UK, we are having some very, very interesting revelations about COVID.
The UK is one of the very few countries on Earth that most Americans would be able to identify the prime minister or the leader of. Most countries, people don't know the leader's name. And of course, Boris Johnson, he's only been in for, 3 years or so, and he's getting the boot. And he's going to be replaced either by the Indian, the dual citizen, what's his name, Rishi Sunak, or some crazy bitch. Liz Truss. Does Liz Truss have any redeeming qualities?
I don't think either of them have any redeeming qualities. I mean, you have to remember with Liz Truss, she isn't somebody who is a patriot. She's not somebody who's a conservative. She's certainly not somebody who's a nationalist. She's not somebody who really should have even been in the Conservative Party. I mean, she came from the Liberal Democrats. She's not somebody that you would say, hey, this is a natural fit for the Conservative Party. I mean, anything but, really. And it really follows, she's really followed that trend that David Cameron began of bringing people into the party that, well, the Conservatives have never really pushed a Conservative agenda on a national level. But they did have some interesting backbenchers at one time. They did have people who pushed back to some degree against the globalist agenda. But I think what you've actually, or what you're actually starting to see here and now, is something that's very, very different. You're starting to see people who are openly liberals, people who are openly anti-British, people who are pro-mass immigration, coming out and fronting the party. And that's really what you've got with Liz Truss. She was a young Liberal Democrat. She nailed her colours to the mast. I think she switched to become a Conservative because it was a simpler route to power for her. And at the end of the day, many of these people are just career politicians. They're not bothered which party they join as long as that party can get them to power so that they can then push their policies. And we've seen this within the Conservatives. Many people who have nothing in common with the rank and file Conservatives, nothing in common with the local Conservative associations, don't push Conservative ideals or Conservative views. They all get involved in with the Conservatives, and from that point onwards, they push what they believe when they've been elected. But because the Conservative Party are so desperate to stand increasingly diverse slates of candidates with more women, with more ethnic minorities, this is what they get. And anyone who dissents against that, who is likely to be a genuine Conservative, well, they've been purged from the party completely.
So, okay, and she's only 47 years old. Relatively young for a politician. How is it that
I don't know about that, Patrick. I think America's quite unique in the fact that everyone who's a politician in America is basically a geriatric. I think here in the UK,
I guess so.
This thing of having dementia-ridden, you know, crazy old men run the country, that's not something that's normal in Europe. And if you actually look at European leaders, they're typically a lot younger. It seems to be a real, and the same with Canada, actually. It seems to be something with America that, you know, if you obviously look at Trump, he's in his 70s, Biden's in his 70s. Is Hillary Clinton in her 70s as well?
But yeah, she's late 70s.
Was McCain in his 70s when he ran?
Yes, he was in his 70s. That's, I mean, that's certainly been a recent thing. Historically, even when the life expectancy was a lot shorter, it was typically people in their 50s. Even when the life except like if you're looking at the 19th century presidents, and the youngest 19th century president, I believe, was Franklin Pierce, who was about 47 when he was elected. So they're typically older, 50s, 60s. The 70s started, the first president to be 70, was it Dwight Eisenhower? Did he have his 70th birthday in the White House? I'm not even sure. Otherwise it was Reagan. Reagan, Bush was in his mid to late 60s, the second Bush, and now we're thoroughly dominated by these geriatrics, and a lot of the people running for president, like, Sanders is old. And Liz Warren was already 70 when she was running. So yeah, it's getting very geriatric here. But still,
and obviously, some people would argue that with these people comes a wealth of knowledge, a wealth of experience. You know, with age comes a certain gravitas, really, because these people have experienced more of life. They have lived. And hopefully they would be able to pass on their knowledge, their experience, their wisdom. But that's not always the case, is it? I mean, you see with Biden, he is an embarrassment. He is a bumbling buffoon. I mean, if Biden had anything like the hostility from the press that Trump receives, I don't think he could handle that. I think he would completely collapse. Obviously, he'd just become a gibbering fool, and every press conference would have to be halted. But I will say this. For American politics under Biden, they do have it locked down, don't they? You can see that the government, the press secretary, and the media, they're in lockstep now. So that isn't going to happen. And I think what you've got here is sort of a coming together of the media and the government in a more open way than we've ever seen before. And really, anyone who is press secretary now for the White House just hits a home run every single press briefing, and Biden is allowed to sort of wander around on the stage like a crazy old man who doesn't know where the bathroom is, gibbering to himself, shaking hands with invisible people. No one says anything. But we don't really get that in Europe. You know, we don't really we don't really see that in Europe. We have a very, very different way of doing things. And I would say that fundamentally that's left us probably not with any better leadership, certainly not with any better leadership. We haven't got these wonderful sort of warrior king leaders who do what the people want and advocate for their people. But we certainly haven't had the sort of embarrassment that Biden has heaped on America yet. And quite weirdly, as America's leaders get older, Europe's leaders seem to get younger and younger. You've obviously got the Finnish Prime Minister. She's younger than me. I think she's about 36.
Yeah.
And obviously she was recently embarrassed herself by having some, you know, boozy night out where she was dancing. Basically.
Like a 21-year-old or a 20-year-old.
Like a drunk girl in her early 20s in a club in Ibiza. Very embarrassing. Now, some people were saying, oh, she should be allowed to have fun, let her hair down. But I've got to say, if you look at her as a world leader on the global scale, and you put her up against, say, somebody like Viktor Orban or Vladimir Putin, you couldn't really take her seriously, could you?
No. You can't take
it. And I do think the age of politicians should be a little older, especially if they're leaders, but also they should not be as old as, I think once you get into your 70s, you know, maybe be wheeled out for speeches or for special events, but I don't think you're really at the cutting edge of your career. And I think there is a happy medium. And generally speaking, I think the age of British politicians is about right. But as I said, that doesn't make them any better at their jobs.
Well, we've had three presidents who were in their 70s for most of their careers, right? For most of their presidencies. That's Reagan, Trump, and Biden, and none of them were known for being particularly in charge of what was going on. In the case of Trump, it was less because of senility and more because he, you know, lack of experience in government and massive opposition from within the system to him. But he was never running things. He was never able to run things. He had the desire to. He was trying to be hands-on, but never knew how to get a grip. And Reagan had a reputation, especially in his second term, for falling asleep at meetings and whatnot. But at any rate, I wanted to talk a little bit about Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak, because it seems like at least Rishi Sunak is starting to say that, and who's even younger. He's born in 1980, right? And
he's the same age as me.
Yeah,
I was born in 1980.
Yeah, but you're not Indian, so you're not gonna progress up the conservative ladder that way.
I think the reason I won't be progressing up the conservative ladder has very little to do with my ethnicity and an awful lot to do with the fact that I actually like my country, and I think the British people, should survive as a distinct and individual people. Rishi Sunak is pretty much a poster child for a lot of what is very, very wrong in British politics today. And people might say, well, okay, what do you mean by that? Do you mean just that he's not white? And no, it's not actually that he's not white. I wouldn't say that that's the main driving reason for him being sort of a bad egg. I'd say really the main driving reasons for him being a bad egg is that he fundamentally he's out of touch, he's super rich, he doesn't mix with normal people, he doesn't understand any of the concerns of normal people. And because of those things, he's somebody that I don't think is a credible person or a credible candidate for Prime Minister. And I think that was one of the appeals of Boris Johnson. When Boris Johnson was elected, you've got to remember, it wasn't a landslide of the Margaret Thatcher or Tony Blair variety, but it was an 80-seat majority. And what made it all the more remarkable was it was an 80-seat majority after a decade of being in power. Now, after a decade of being in power, that fundamentally is something that is, extremely impressive. That is something that people would say, that's an impressive feat, really. And I think that was largely down to the fact that normal people saw him as a guy who they could relate to. And, that is, again, something that's not very achievable by a lot of politicians. A lot of politicians, they aren't relatable people. Normal people don't like them. And that led to what we saw, or what was termed, the collapse of the Red Wall. So the Red Wall was Labour Party areas that had stood for decades, sometimes decades and decades, sometimes for the best part of a century. These had been Labour constituencies that had never changed hands. And many of these constituencies went blue. They switched over to the Conservatives, and that was credited to Boris Johnson. And it was credited to Boris Johnson because Boris Johnson had done something that no other Conservative had done in quite the same way, and that was to fundamentally appeal to people that Conservatives don't usually appeal to. And I think that was that was something that was unique to him. And some people called him buffoon, some people said he was like a bit of a blithering idiot, that he wasn't. Some people tried to make out that normal people couldn't get behind him because of his sort of strange demeanor. But most people on the street seemed to actually like that. They seemed to think he was relatable. They saw him as someone that they could maybe sit in the pub with, have a drink with, invite round the house for dinner, that they could get on with, they could have a laugh and a joke with. Somebody that fundamentally, if they expressed their views behind closed doors with Boris about maybe immigration, about the EU, about other issues that the British public were interested in, he would agree with them. Now, you and I both know that actually isn't the case. You and I know that he wouldn't have actually agreed with them, and that he's a globalist. Now, when it comes down to it, the fact that he is a globalist is something that he hid extremely well from, you know, normal people. He hid that very, very well. And he ensured that most normal people, when looking at him, didn't think that at all. They thought he was, you know, on board with them. They thought he was, you know, sort of Team Britain, so to speak, and that he was going to get a grip of mass immigration, that he was going to get a grip of all these problems that they had bemoaned for so long. And I think that really what you've got here is a situation where it's very, very unfortunate, because normal people were fooled, and they were fooled on an industrial level by him, and
fooled on all sorts of different agendas. I mean, people have been fooled in multiple ways.
Yeah.
Well, again, I mean, they're fooled as to his nature, but also, you know, they've been fooled as to the deadliness of the deadly coronavirus, and, you know, Black Lives Matter, and all sorts of things, and now the Ukraine war.
Yeah, they've been fooled. I would say they were fooled on immigration, they were fooled on Brexit, they were fooled on, all of these different things. And, you know, fundamentally, when it came down to it, most of these people thought by voting Boris Johnson, they were going to get a hard Brexit, something that they'd voted for, and that was going to lead to Britain's borders being closed. And I think that fundamentally, that was something that has led to, you know, a huge amount of, you know, disappointment for normal British people. A huge amount of disappointment. And it's something that, as he leaves the door, as he walks out of British politics for good, I don't think that...
Walking out for good?
Yeah, usually when a Prime Minister goes, the Prime Minister doesn't stay within the House. Usually they resign as a minister, and they go on to do something else. So Tony Blair, when he left as Prime Minister, he didn't remain as a backbencher. He didn't remain in the House. He left. When I say the House, I mean the Houses of Parliament. He then left, and that was it.
Did he become some sort of UN emissary for
them? Yeah, that's exactly the kind of thing that these people...
Churchill stayed in, right? And came back to in the early 50s as quite an old man, to lead Britain again for a little while.
Yeah. Some do. Some come back, and when they come back, they, some of them do come back, and when they come back, they might go on for a second shot as a minister. But that's very rare. I think Churchill's more or less the
nowadays,
exception to the rule.
That's in the exception. Old days, you had, you know, Gladstone and Disraeli alternating, and
this was a relatively long time ago now.
Yeah.
And also, I've got to say this, okay, and this is something that I do think it's worth pointing this out. When these people have done their damage, they usually disappear and make a vast, vast sum of money somewhere else. So somewhere else, they leave and they make a vast sum of money, elsewhere. Okay? Vast. And, you know, when we're saying vast, we are talking vast sums of money. So like Blair now.
Consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Vast. And, you know, when we're saying vast, we are talking vast sums of money. So like Blair now is a very, very wealthy man. When he was prime minister, there was lots of things swirling around him that he was in fact, you know, not necessarily, I'm not saying he wasn't wealthy, I'm not saying he wasn't doing well for himself, but he wasn't as phenomenally wealthy as he is now. And the same might happen for Boris Johnson, I don't know. But many of these former prime ministers, they walk away, they end up with a huge amount of money, they claim they've made it all from after-dinner speeches, tours, special lectures they give, BlackRock, Goldman Sachs, all these conferences. But is there really that much money there? I would argue not. I would argue that's not where the money comes from. And you might be thinking, oh, Mark, where do you think the money comes from? Well, I'll be completely honest. I think the money for these people comes not from, Goldman Sachs and all these places, but it's funneled to them from special interest groups that did deals with them when they were in power. So, for example, Tony Blair was not phenomenally rich until the war in Iraq, until he left office and was all of a sudden phenomenally rich. And you've got to ask yourself, well, how did that happen? How did that happen? And the answer for me has to be that, he came in, he made huge amounts of money, most likely, absolutely most likely, from his dealings to do with that war. And he was promised riches when he stepped down. And he's still a very influential man that a lot of people listen to. Now, I find him an absolutely disgusting individual. I despise Tony Blair. But the fact is, you can't take away from him his influence, his power, and his wealth. And his influence and his power and his wealth all came about largely post being a prime minister and post making several terrible decisions, you know, obviously the Iraq war being the main one, which were done for the interest of one particular special interest group. And I believe that, a lot of all of that was clearly, a deal struck behind closed doors to advance the interests of a special interest group.
You know what a lot of people thought of Tony Blair in the United States while he was prime minister? We thought of him as George Bush's interpreter, because George Bush was very inarticulate, and they spent a lot of time together. Blair was always coming over to the United States during the Iraq War, and they were, scheming their schemes, and then they'd have a joint press conference, and George Bush was so inarticulate, and then Tony Blair would jump in and explain what George Bush was trying to say. It's kind of funny. George Bush being inarticulate and kind of stupid, he was somebody who the press told Americans, well, you can relate to him because he resembles you.
Look, I'm no fan of George Bush as a politician. I'm no fan of his policies. But he did come across as a relatively likable guy. And I'll give you an example of this. There was this incredible video that did the rounds some time ago. And this video that did the rounds was of George Bush basically giving answers to press questions. And some of his answers were so hilarious and so funny, you couldn't help but giggle. There was one where they were asking him a difficult question. He was like, oh, I don't want to answer this nonsense. And then, seconds later, he turns to them and he goes, but now, watch this drive. And he's out playing golf and he hits the golf ball. And the press are sort of just stunned at his cheekiness. And you tend to find that liberals and sort of, leftards on Twitter would go into absolute meltdown over that and be like, this guy's not a serious guy, this guy's terrible, he's awful, he's a monster. And ultimately, when it comes down to it, he's probably someone that everyone finds at least a little bit funny. I'm not saying he's a wonderful absolutely wonderful world leader, or he's a good person. I don't think he was either of those things, but he did come across relatable. And I would say that Boris Johnson,
you remember that time the Iraqi guy threw his shoe at him and he just ducked? He had very good reflexes.
I can't remember that, but I was going to say, I think Boris Johnson, if you were to look at Boris and you were to say Boris based himself on another politician, it would probably be George W. Bush, because both of them had very similar approaches to politics. Both of them came in there as guys that wanted to be, relatable, wanted to be, funny, wanted the public to take a liking to them. And I think they both did that through very similar methods. I think their methodology.
Leilani, heavenly flower, nature fashion roses.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's just a few. Carrie: great product, and I will continue to use. I've been taking it for over a year now. I'm 60 and feel great. I would highly recommend this product to anyone over the age of 40. Amazon customer, 5 stars. I'm quite happy about it. Extendivite has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs, and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. Amazon customer, 5 stars. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com, or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org. And click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store, or call us
800-724-2719 extension 3. 800-724-2719 extension 3.
You are my paradise completed.
Oh, lovely Leilani,
you are my
Sonny wanted the public to take a liking to them. And I think they both did that through very similar methods. I think their methodology of reaching out to the public was extremely similar. And it does say something about the mentality of both Brits and Americans, something we have in common. I mean, obviously, many Americans do have British ancestry. They're part of what you'd call the Anglosphere. So I think we all like an everyman. We all like somebody who's relatable. And if you tap into that, you can get pretty far in politics. And I think one thing that sort of united Bush, Trump, and also Johnson was they did have a cheeky way about them. They did have an everyman appeal. They were people who generally talked straight. They made the odd gaffe, but normal people seem to warm to that. And I know they don't all have the same politics, but I would definitely say they had similar appeals. And that's something that people like Biden don't have. It's something that I think really hurt Hillary Clinton. Obviously, I don't believe Hillary Clinton really had an appeal, so to speak. I don't believe Hillary Clinton was somebody who appealed to normal people. She seemed shrill. She seemed shrew-like. She seemed somebody who was, you know, often very, very antagonistic towards normal people. And I remember at the time when Clinton was sort of fighting Trump for the White House, there was a very, very telling piece in the paper, or it was not the paper, it was in one of the magazines, an American magazine. It was the sort of magazine that housewives would read or women would read. It was a woman's magazine. And it had a double page spread about Hillary Clinton. And this double page spread, I thought, was absolutely stunning. This double page spread was, about how she was a normal person. And it had things like, Hillary, she goes shopping. Hillary, she looks at fruit in the store. Hillary, she bakes a cake. Hillary, she walks her dog. And this article had been obviously carefully put together to prove that Hillary Clinton was a normal person. Now, that is something really special, isn't it? You know, to actually have to actually have to prove that Hillary Clinton, you know, is a normal person by running a double page spread in a magazine explaining that, yes, you know, she walks her dog. Yes, she goes to the store and picks up two bell peppers and says, which one looks like the better bell pepper? Because I'm making I'm making bolognese tonight and I want a red bell pepper for my bolognese. Oh, which one's going to be better? The fact that they had to say that shows that their feedback from the public was that this woman was so unrelatable that they had to do damage control for her.
Yeah, because none of it's true. She doesn't go shopping. She doesn't walk her dog. None of that's true.
Oh, did you ever watch The Simpsons?
I watched it back in the 90s a little bit.
Yeah, because that's the kind of joke you would get about politicians in The Simpsons. So The Simpsons would run. The Simpsons had every Halloween they do an episode called Treehouse of Horror, and the Treehouse of Horror is three short sort of horror in inverted commas themed stories with The Simpsons in it. And one was about two space aliens that both ran for president at the same time, basically mocking America's two-party system and stating that if you had two completely horrific monsters that wanted to destroy humanity and they both ran at the same time, the American public still wouldn't vote for a third candidate. And it was sort of a mockery of the American system. But seeing that article in that magazine was almost like the satire you'd see in The Simpsons in an episode like that, where a space alien is trying to be elected and, you know, a magazine is trying to prove that this space alien is just as relatable as any man on the street. And that's what Hillary Clinton came over as, an alien. And that's why I think Johnson did so well. And I think, getting back to what we were going to talk about, because we'd actually have a plan for the show.
Yeah, because we're going to talk about something.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking about Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak. They are much more alien than Boris Johnson. And Sunak, particularly, and I don't just mean alien in that he isn't of indigenous stock. He's clearly not, you know, a Brit. But what I mean about Rishi Sunak is he's super wealthy Indian who really has nothing in common with any, you know, normal person. He just doesn't have anything in common with normal people. And I think that, you know, that's something that is very, very telling, isn't it?
Yeah, and the way that the dynamic of this race to replace Boris Johnson, you had the first stage was this, you know, elimination race, eliminating one person after another until you get down to two. And Rishi Sunak was clearly the favorite of the parliamentary party. And then all of a sudden, now that it's whittled down to two, and the rank and file, hundreds of thousands of conservative rank and file get to vote. Now all of a sudden, it's Liz Truss who is the odds-on favorite. They have very different opinions. But what I really wanted to get to was Rishi Sunak has, of late, maybe Liz Truss is jumping on this bandwagon too, but admitting that there were mistakes made with COVID. And of course, at the same time in the United States, you have this subcommittee in Congress, a Democratic subcommittee that's looking into the rollout of the vaccines, and is criticizing President Trump for having rolled it out so fast under this Operation Warp Speed. And so you've got, I mean, so many obvious huge mistakes are being made, and how do the people in charge admit mistakes were made without digging their own grave? That was kind of what I wanted to ask about. And
Multiple things here, and I'm going to try and cover them quickly. First, in the UK, over the last few weeks, we might have talked about this on the show last week or the week before, we've got this massive revelation that's just rolling out and rolling out and rolling out. And that revelation is that fundamentally, more people have died because of lockdown restrictions than because of COVID. So they are finally admitting, in absolutely no uncertain terms, that the preventative measures were worse than the disease itself, that the preventative measures cost more lives than COVID. That is huge. Secondly,
and I just want to clarify, what are they saying killed people due to the lockdown? Suicides?
It's not suicides. You see, suicide is part of it. Depression, mental health things, but that's the tip of the iceberg. That's the stuff we saw throughout COVID itself. So through COVID itself, we saw children being harmed by their parents. We saw hideous abuses taking place in different homes. We saw alcoholism, drug abuse, and suicide. We saw all of those things. But that is, as I said a second ago, the tip of the iceberg. What's killing people is delayed medical intervention for much more serious diseases. So when the lockdowns went into action, what you actually had was millions of people seeking medical help over cancer, over serious things. And these people are now dying because they didn't get the medical care they needed. And it's delayed medical treatment for all these really serious things. And this is especially prevalent amongst young people, because young people are highly unlikely to die of COVID. But so really anyone. I mean, I'm going to give you another headline here. And this might make you go, whoa. So you got four, and this is a genuine headline. 4 in 5 COVID-19 deaths had at least 3 medical conditions involved. At least 3 medical conditions involved. Diseases of the respiratory system were reported in 5,279, or 98%, of COVID-19 deaths. So 98% of people who died of COVID already had respiratory problems, right? And 80% of people who died of COVID, or had COVID somewhere on their death certificate, or died with COVID, as they said, had at least 3 medical conditions involved. So that's crazy. So what we've learned is COVID actually wasn't a big killer, unless you had underlying health conditions or were very old. What is the big killer are the effects of lockdowns. And Boris Johnson enacted all of this and was shoved out the door over Partygate very quickly after. Now, I'm not massively conspiratorially minded. I believe that stuff like nanobots in the jabs, 5G frying your brain, flat earth, I think all of that's nonsense, to be frank. But I do think there is potentially a conspiracy afoot here. Now, Boris Johnson was very quick to be shoved out of the door. And when a prime minister goes, usually the vast majority of their team goes with them. Meaning that when somebody comes in, it's a fresh start, it's a new team. And if anyone has been part of the old team, they're usually given a new lease of life because they disavow the outgoing prime minister. And that's what's happening here. But isn't that a bit convenient, Patrick? We're seeing the guy who imposed all this on us being pushed towards the door very rapidly, just after it, and just at the time when all the truth's coming out. Now, he will be gone in a matter of days, because we're coming up to September. So if he's gone in a matter of days, what are we going to have? Well, I'll tell you that what we'll have is we'll have a lot of people shuffling around, looking at their feet and saying, oh, well, isn't this all unfortunate? And then they'll look up and say, but we've got to move on. There's nothing we can do now. Boris is gone. He's gone, clean slate, let's start again. And unfortunately, that is what happens time and again when politicians mess things up.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen it before, haven't we? There's a huge, huge, set of poor judgments or poor planning decisions made. Everything goes wrong, it's deeply unpopular, the administration go out, they're gone now so we can do nothing about it. And I think that's what's going to happen. I think people are going to walk away from this. The likes of your Johnsons, your Faucis, your, I forget the name of that horrible one in the UK who was always on everything. He looked really weird looking guy. Just looked strange. And he was always at the forefront of the, you know, telling people that the world was going to end because of COVID. All these. Sorry?
That's what I'm I've been asking at the beginning of the show, but I thought there was somebody named Neil Ferguson. But
let me just Google that. Maybe. It might be, but I don't think it was. It's not Neil Ferguson. It was the. I think it. I'm going to have to Google it. But either way, I think when it comes down to it, Boris Johnson walking out of the door and. That will be the end. That will be the end of that. And they'll draw a nice line under it and they'll move on. And you can see Rishi Sunak already doing the disavowal stuff, can't you? You can see Rishi Sunak doing the disavowal because he's already saying, well, you know, I did my best. I did my best. And Chris Whitty, that's it. Chris Whitty. Chris Whitty and David Vallance, they were the two, who always used to be flanking, who always used to be flanking. Sorry, not David Vallance, Patrick Vallance. So it was Boris Johnson, Chris Whitty, and Patrick Vallance. And they were always there doing these press releases. But once they're out the door, they'll draw a line under it, and we will be told, you know, the nation's moved on. Rishi will be hailed as a hero because he's come out and said, hey, guys, you know, he's trying to rewrite history, saying, hey, guys, I was in all those meetings, and I was pushing back. I was saying this wasn't right. I was saying, you know, let's be a bit more liberal with these restrictions. We need to keep the economy moving, but I was shouted down. I was written out of the minutes. I'm a victim as much as anyone, and I was the plucky warrior fighting for the good of the nation. That's what he's going to say.
Although
he's going to rebuild himself as the man that wouldn't have had the lockdown.
He's not, right, at this point, he's the underdog. He's probably not going to be the prime minister.
No, I think he's the underdog for several reasons, not least because he's not white. And I think the rank and file Conservative Party members still want a white Conservative Party leader. And I know that people say, well, it's very multicultural now, but there has always been a disconnect between the rank and file and the parliamentary party. I think the parliamentary party would have, by a long stretch, picked Rishi Sunak. They'd have picked Rishi Sunak for a couple of reasons. Firstly, his ethnicity. Secondly, his business links and the fact that he is phenomenally rich and he's one of that clique. And they would have picked him because they would have thought, hey, we can stand in the next election and we can say we're the most progressive, most anti-racist, etc., etc., whilst at the same time saying we're going to cut down on immigration but avoid being hit with the big stick of racism. And they would have reasoned that would be the best route forward. And you even had leading, I think it was Conservative Party donors, who were saying you have to pick Sunak because if you don't, everyone's going to know that you're a big gang of nasty racists. The parliamentary party would have picked him. But I think the rank and file won't pick him. And I'll tell you why the rank and file won't pick him. There will be a natural bias against him because people do feel uncomfortable about having somebody run a country who has a dual citizenship and is clearly not of that country. That's the first thing. And the second thing, and this is very important, the rank and file, and I've been building to this all show, were the people that identified with Boris Johnson. And many of those rank and file didn't want Johnson going out of the door. And now Johnson's out of the door, I can tell you this now, they will be unhappy about it. They won't want it. They will hold Sunak and several of the others as, you know, to blame for this. because Sunak did. Sunak put the dagger in Johnson's back. And a lot of people will also think that he's tried to climb the greasy pole, that he undermined Johnson for his own, you know, political desires. And that's not going to sit well with people.
No. Hey, listen, we only have a couple minutes left. There's one last question. So it looks like it's going to be Liz Truss who wins. Just in time for her to have her own debacle, because she's been the foreign secretary during this whole Ukraine war thing. Boris Johnson was kept going back and forth to Kiev and meeting with Zelensky and telling Zelensky, don't negotiate, you got to fight until you win. And it's going to be a disaster. And obviously the Ukrainian government is going to fall. And Liz Truss was there as foreign secretary cheering this on. She's had a very hardline attitude. Is Britain going to be looking for a new prime minister within the next 12 months after Liz Truss?
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC. 417-932-6419.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Kosher-tified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher-certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-tified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure and natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
Liz Truss was there as foreign secretary cheering this on. She's had a very hardline attitude. Is Britain going to be looking for a new prime minister within the next 12 months after Liz Truss comes in? How long can she possibly last?
I don't know. I think she will last up until the next general election. I can't see the Conservatives winning that general election, but I can't see Labour winning either. So you're going to say, well, who's going to win? I think you'll end up with a Parliament without a clear majority, which would mean that Labour and the Scottish National Party may well go into coalition as a ruling party, in the same way that the Liberal Democrats and the Conservatives made up a coalition government in 2010. I can't see there being an out-and-out winner at this current time, because Keir Starmer is not a man of the people either. He's another one that people aren't going to warm to. And he's in a difficult position because his party, many of the hardcore, want to support trade union action at this point. But there are also, some serious problems with that, because a lot of normal people who are struggling at home are very, very angry that trade unions would take industrial action at such a time and make things even worse. So he's got a really tough decision to make. Does he stand by his hardcore and say no to the industrial action and annoy his hardcore, or does he get behind industrial action and risk annoying a lot of normal people? Because if you're struggling to make ends meet and you've got to get to your shift or you're not going to get paid, and you find out the trains aren't running, well, I'm going to tell you this. What is actually going to happen? Well, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. You're going to annoy people. Because I'll tell you this now. If I was struggling to get to work, and I was potentially going to get fired for not going into work, and I was definitely going to miss a day's pay, and I needed that money to feed my family, I would be fuming with the people who were on strike. I would be absolutely livid. I'd be saying, look, you guys who are already getting paid above the national average are asking for more money, and in doing so, you know, we aren't going to be able to feed our family. And I'll tell you this, that's going to annoy a lot of people.
Well, I'll tell you what's going to annoy a lot of people. We're out of time, but I want to thank you for joining me, Mark.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always an absolute pleasure doing the show, and I think we've discussed a few interesting things today, but I think this is just the start of the roller coaster ride, Patrick. So I'll be back next week to see where it takes us.
Thank you, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at TLBTalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.